Thank you. I've been asked to review reionization and substructure, and I'm going to start with what I think we know relatively well, or quite well. That is to say, we live in the era of precision cosmology. We know that at a redshift of 1088 or so, the universe becomes optically thin due to Thomson scattering. Recombination freezes out here with an electron fraction of one part in 10 to the 4 or so. That electron fraction will depend on cosmological parameter. And these free electrons are important because they will catalyze, as we'll see in a moment, the formation of H2. And H2 is the first coolant that will allow the first baryonic objects to collapse at early time and perhaps form stars. The residual free electrons will keep, in fact, they'll play another role. They keep the temperature of the intergalactic gas locked through to the temperature of the CMB through Compton scattering until a thermalization redshift of 150 or so. This is locked temperature as a function of redshift. This is cosmic time here. This is the temperature of the CMB dropping as 1 over A. Thus, the temperature of the gas at the redshift 150 starts to decouple because of adiabatic expansion is cooling faster. And so it will reach temperature perhaps below 10 Kelvin or so, and below the temperature of the CMB. And then sometime between a redshift of 10 or 20, the universe will be ionized, reheated by the first generation of sources, massive stars, mini quasars. The temperature will go up to 10 to the 4 degrees, perhaps even higher. And that will raise the Jeans mass of the intergalactic medium, and will bring that Jeans mass from 10 to the 5 solar masses also up to galactic scale, 10 to the 9, 10 to the 10 solar masses. And this reheating will influence galaxy formation. The universe does become semi-opaque again after reionization. There are many more free electrons. And the WMAP 30-year results tell us that the electron scattering is 0.01 or so. And this is from WMAP 30-year release. This is electron fraction redshift of reionization. If the universe gets fully reionized, the electron fraction is unity or so, and that means it'll have to be reionized at a redshift of above 12. So plenty, perhaps, of star formation activity at early time. How early does star formation start? Well, we can simulate that. This is a simulation run by Michael Coulen, an ex-student at Santa Cruz, is now at Princeton, and myself last year. You see a box, a typical box of the universe, 1 megaparsec cube. That's just dark matter. The movie stops at the redshift of 15 or so. This has been run with ENSO, which is a hydrodynamic AMR code. You see the box, there is gas overlaid, and the halos here, dark matter masses between 10 to the 5 up to 10 to the 7, plenty of them already at the redshift of 15. And this little movie here shows, it's a phase diagram movie. This is log temperature, this is gas temperature versus over density as a function of cosmic epoch. And you see most of the gas, the color coding here is by volume fraction, so yellow means most of the volume. This is low density gas. It's cooling down adiabatically because of Hubble expansion. There is shock heating, okay, and then for over densities larger than 100 or so, you start to see that gas cooling down, this blue strip here. It's cooling down down to temperature of 100 Kelvin or so, and that's H2 cooling. This simulation includes all the chemistry needed to track the formation of molecular hydrogen at early time. There are no metals at these times that can allow the gas to cool down and form stars. And so a little bit of the physics here, you have to rely on H2. To convert hydrogen in H2, you have to rely on catalytic process. In the ISM, it happens on dust grain. At early time in the universe, it can only happen using this chain here, which relies on the presence of free electrons. And so if I take that box and I plot the fraction of cold and dense gas, here, this is gas at over density greater than 1,000, gas at over density greater than 10 to the 5 in those halos as a function of halo mass, already at the redshift of 17.5 or so, you see that all halos above few by 10 to the 5 or so have enough cold and dense gas that they should be start to forming stars. The fraction of cold and dense gas above 10 to the 6 exceed 30-40%. And those halos that have a lot of cold and dense gas typically have large H2 abundances. This is the H2 fraction exceeding 10 to the minus 4 or so. And in this regime, gas can cool down due to H2 cooling on timescales that are shorter than the Hubble time. All this is nice. We want star formation activity to start at early time. We are facing a lot of problems. We face the problem that there are bright quasars equal 6 powered by 3 billion solar masses black holes. And this, and if those black holes were starting from seed black holes of 100 solar masses or so, and those seed black holes were accreting at the editor rate, you'd have to put those seed black holes at very early time to build up 3 billion solar masses by z equals 6. There isn't a lot of cosmic time available at z equals 6 or so. So you have to start very early. Which brings to the next question, well, where are the first stars, black holes, and their hosts today? Those are the one I was showing where hydro simulation would stop at early time. So to answer this question, we run Via Láctea. You've seen already some figures and images about Via Láctea early this week. There is a large consortium of people behind this massive simulation. This is the first N-body simulation which of a galaxy halo which resolves the dark matter hosts of the early population, three stars and massive black holes, down to z equals zero. And we run this simulation in WMAP third-year cosmology just because the WMAP results were finally announced 1 week before starting the run. Well, in fact, a few weeks. It took some time to do initial conditions. So these simulations have a small sigma 8.74 and they have a tilt in the power spectrum. Three people plus the machine. That's the machine where we run the simulation. It's one of the fastest supercomputers in the world. In fact, it was the fastest 2 years ago, and now it's getting older. So, are we all? So this is the largest dark matter simulation to date of a Milky Way size halo. It took about 320,000 CPU hours to run that simulation. It took 350,000 CPU hours to run the Millennium simulation, if you are familiar with that, except that that was for a slower machine. So this is the equivalent of about, in CPU hours, it's about three Millennium simulations. There are 200 million high-resolution particles embedded in a periodic 9 megaparsec box, which is sampled at low resolution. Of these 213 million particles, about 85 million end up in the virial radius of the hosts, which is a Milky Way type of halo, 10 to the 12 solar masses, a virial radius of 400 kiloparsec, force resolution of 90 parsec, particle mass of 20,000 solar masses or so. This is the density profile, in fact, of the host halo. In fact, is the logarithmic slope of the density profile. The red dots are the simulation as a function of radius. The blue, it's a NFW fit to the host halo. You get a reasonable fit for a concentration of 16 or so. And as you can see, the slope appears to be shallower than NFW within 0.8% of the virial radius. Still, these are the density residuals down to an estimated convergence radius, which is about 15 softening lengths or so. The residual are just less than 10%. So NFW on this scale seems to do relatively well. We resolve sub-sub-halo in the most massive satellites. These are the first four most massive satellites. They range in mass between 2.5 10 to the 9 solar masses up to almost 10 to the 10 at different distances, from 185 kiloparsec from the center up to 350 kiloparsec from the center. These are bound sub-substructures. Let's look at the mass function of satellites. This is the cumulative number of satellites as a function of sub-halo mass. Okay, 10,000. There are about 10,000 satellites in that simulations. Of these, 6,000 satellites are above a million solar masses. Low resolution simulations, and I'm showing this, the mass function of the high resolution simulation. For comparison, we also have run a low resolution simulation, 3 million solar mass particles within the virial radius, and that's the red curve here. So you see that low resolution, you resolve at most 200 satellites in this type of cosmology, we are starting to see 10,000 satellites appearing at much higher resolution. The blue curve here is a function which is just 1 over m. So the number of satellites, the differential mass function goes as m to the minus 2. And that seems to be a relatively good fit to the data up to a few by 10 to the 6 or so, where you start to lose satellites because of numerical effect. Okay, so the number of satellites has gone up by quite a bit. These two curves show the entire number of satellites within the VR radius. These two, high resolution, low resolution, show the number of satellites within 10% of the VR radius. And you see that this is the typical, I'm calling it low resolution, but you know, this is the typical simulation that you find in the literature so far. There are not very many inner satellites. That can be true. There are not very many inner satellites. We start to resolve more than 100 satellites at 100 million particle resolution. Okay, this shows the effect of resolution. This region is 800 kiloparsec or so. That's the low resolution simulations, high resolution, same region, low, high. Let's zoom in, 40 kiloparsec times 10, this is about 400 kiloparsec, low resolution, high resolution. Zooming in further, this is 80 kiloparsec. On the size, that's a low resolution, it's practically smooth. At 85 million particle resolution, you start to see satellites within the inner regions. The total mass fraction in bound subhalo for that type of simulation is 5.3%. This is shown here as a function of radius. The fraction of surface mass density in substructure within a projected distance of 10 kiloparsec from the centers, this is what gravitational lensing is sensitive to, it's 0.3% or so. Except that with M2 minus 2 mass function, we think that this fraction have not converged yet. As you run higher resolution simulation, you're going to see more satellites, and this number will go up. In fact, if you extrapolate the mass function with a slope of m to the minus 2 down to one solar mass or so, then the fraction, the fractional mass in substructure within the VR radius could become as high as 20%. For lensing, in fact, a Milky Way halo is equal to 0 is not ideal, so we run a similar resolution, high-res simulation of an elliptical galaxy. Okay, this has no name, it's just an elliptical galaxy with 100 million particles within the VR radius. We stop the run at 0.5 or so in redshift. And this has already 10% instead of 5%, so twice as much substructure as the Milky Way. This is also run in a different cosmology. So there are environmental effects, there are halo-to-halo variation. There is also the fact that this simulation has not run down to z equals 0, and so there is less time, perhaps, for substructure to be disrupted. That's, again, the satellite mass function for this type of simulation. There are about 20,000 satellites resolved in the elliptical at z equals 0.5, and this is m to the minus 1 cumulative mass function, differential m to the minus 2. Okay, this is the number of satellites as a function of circular velocity now. You see, again, these two curves within the VR radius, within 10% of the VR radius. This is the number of satellites of the Milky Way. I've included some of the satellites which were already mentioned in the previous talk, which have been recently found by the Sloan Digital Sky Service and have velocity dispersion. There are a total here of 15 satellites or so. This is the velocity distribution. So one of the problems here is that it's unclear in the outer region of the galaxy whether we have a complete sample of satellites, but it's clear there are many more satellites we see in our simulation. In fact, about 5 kilometers per second or so, we have about 1,000 satellites. Okay, all these must be dark. There is a new inner missing satellite problem. Even if you are not completing the other parts of the galaxy, we should be completing the inner part of the galaxy. Of these satellites, only one is within 10% of the VR radius, and that's Sagittarius. Above 10 kilometers per second, we find five satellites within 10% of the VR radius in the simulation, compared to one that is observed. Above 5 kilometers per second, there are 26. These satellites are also dark. We don't see them. it's interesting to show the same plot showing virial temperature, which is a proxy for circular velocity instead of circular velocity or mass. So this is 1,000 Kelvin, 5,000 Kelvin, 10 to the 4 Kelvin. And it's clear that what is needed is a very efficient feedback mechanism that is quenching gas cooling and star formation below the atomic cooling mass. Here is the cooling mass function for primordial gas as a function of virial temperature of your host halo. You see here that this peak is due to hydrogen, atomic cooling due to hydrogen, helium, this is H2. And so 20,000 or so corresponds to the peak of atomic hydrogen cooling. We have to quench your star formation and gas cooling in all halos which have virial temperature today below 10,000 Kelvin. Okay, so the question is, what's happening in subhalos with virial temperature less than 2,000 Kelvin? Why are they dark? Now, not only they are not, they seem not to be forming stars, they also have not a lot of H1 gas. If the excess satellite, I don't know why we keep calling missing satellite, it must be because, it's driven by theory, and the theory say the observers are missing satellites. In fact, if you're an observer, you would say there are excess satellites compared to what we see. These excess satellites, if they had a H1 mass that was greater than 1% of the subhalo mass, they would easily be detected in H1. So they are missing stars, they are missing H1. In fact, there are a number of objects, in the few hundreds objects in the Milky Way that have typical H1 masses above 10 to the 6 solar masses or so. Those are the compact high-velocity clouds, which, however, have a different velocity distribution and spatial distribution than our satellite's halo. We can use simulations to track back in time the assembly history of substructure. We've started to do that using the massive simulation I was showing before of the Z equals zero satellites, which have circular velocities above 5 kilometers per second. About 500 of those have progenitors at a redshift which might be close to the redshift of realization, with masses above 100,000 solar masses, which I showed you at the beginning. They should be able, I showed hydrodynamic simulation at the beginning, where H2 cooling seemed to be efficient in these satellites. So there must be a minimum halo size for efficient gas cooling, which can be imposed either by internal feedback mechanism, like supernova explosion, removing the gas so star formation cannot occur, or external feedback mechanism like photoionization from outside from UV radiation. There is a warning tale here about reionization squelching, which is one of the favorite model, and we run hydrodynamic simulation here without any source of radiation in this box. This is ratio. These are projected temperatures, so this is cold, hot. And in this, on the right-hand side, a ratio of 21, we turn a source of FUV, far UV, soft X-ray radiation. Those photons are penetrating. They should quench star formation. They go into the center of those halo. They should quench star formation everywhere. The simulation will be run by Michael Kulin, who used the AMR code ENSO modified to include a source of radiation. And if you look at the movie carefully, you're going to see that the entire box gets photoheated to temperature about 3,000 Kelvin or so, but if you look at high-density gas, that's still cooling down. There's green stuff here along the filaments. And the reason why that's happening is that, because as I told you at the beginning, H2 needs free electrons. The X-ray are going to increase the fraction of free electrons. Free electron will enhance H2 cooling. And so the gas that was already able to cool, in fact, in those little halos, here will cool even further. This is without X-rays, soft UV. This is with soft UV. Temperature electron fraction H2. You see the effect of radiation is, in fact, to increase the amount of coolant that is available for star formation. So how do we quench star formation in those little halos? Not with this type of mechanism. Not with X-rays. Not with external radiation. Perhaps from inside. Perhaps with supernovae. I don't have a lot of time remaining. I just wanted to show you where the future might be about substructure. And one possibility is to detect gamma ray annihilation from those halos within the Milky Way. What those simulations, thank you, tell us, in fact, is that the gamma ray luminosity of the Milky Way has not converged yet. There is equal contribution in gamma rays per substructure mass decade. Okay? So halo seems to be shining in gamma rays, or might be shining in gamma rays, much more than people thought before. The agreement was, in fact, that most of the gamma ray luminosity, that's what's happening at low resolution, would be dominated by massive subhalos, about 10 to the 9 or so. What our simulation seems to imply, in fact, is constant, constant luminosity per mass decade. And so it might be interesting in a few years or so, perhaps if you are lucky with cross-section, etc., this is an all-sky gamma ray annihilation flux map of the Milky Way, in fact, an observer located 8 kiloparsec from the galactic center. You see the galactic center in gamma ray annihilation. And even at our resolution, you only see a few subhalos. But you start to see the effect of substructure here. This is one of the largest clumps in our simulation. It's a 10 to the 9 subhalo, 30 kiloparsec away from the galactic center. And so it's possible, perhaps, with the next generation of gamma ray telescope, GLASS Veritas, it might be possible, in fact, that some of that substructure might be detectable. We think, in fact, that you're seeing here just the effect of low resolution. Even our highest resolution simulation is not able to resolve gamma ray clumps or dark matter clumps near the solar circle, and that's why you only can see the galactic center there. And I think that's going to be it for today. Thank you.
I want to ask, how sensitive is your mass fraction subhalos to a choice of sigma 8?
Well, it would be nice to answer saying we run another simulation for 4 months with a different sigma 8, but I don't have the answer to that. The lower sigma 8 will decrease the amount of substructure that there is. Okay, it's both the lower sigma 8 also because there is a tilt in the power spectrum. That should not be a large effect. But, you know, you can probably use semi-analytic model to answer that question. I cannot say that from the simulation. I don't have a comparison simulation, except the elliptical that I showed you. There is a different mass fraction there, but it's unclear which mechanism dominates. I suspect that the different cosmology doesn't make much of a difference. And in fact, I think we estimated that, and it didn't seem to me, on this scale, to make a large difference. So the increased amount of substructure is really due to high resolution. Those subhalos are able to survive if you resolve their cusp density profile, which you can't at lower resolution.
Piero, you brought up a new problem of the inner missing satellites or excess satellites. Will those survive if you included the disk, stellar disk, and the gaseous disk of the galaxy within 10 kiloparsecs?
Well, I don't know. Of course, you can't. If you want to put baryons in it, you have to put those also in those halos, perhaps, if they're able to have some gas. And so, you know, baryons could also increase, make them more resilient to tidal disruption. But I think that it's a very interesting problem is, what is the effect of those inner satellites, which were not resolved before, on the disk? We heard some talk, in fact, in the previous talk, that disk heating is an issue. It is dominated by the most massive subhalos, but it also depends on how much time those subhalos spend in the disk. And the inner satellite are going to spend more time in the disk than the other one. So I don't know. I don't have an answer for that. It'll be nice to estimate, but again, I think it's going to be hard to do much better than this in terms of simulations.
Piero, you mentioned supernovae as an alternative, but you didn't really say if you think that will work.
This stuff is coming out. I haven't had it right now. I haven't had a lot of time to think about it. Squelching from outside is much more efficient. You have a massive halos that forms stars, that emits UV radiation, and then it affects the entire box. If you want to do it from the inside, every of those subhalos must have star formation. And I'm worried that if that's true, sure, you can remove a lot of gas with supernovae, but you're going to have a lot of star formation at every time. You're going to produce a lot of metals. And that perhaps is an issue. So, you know, I don't know quantitatively what the answer is. I think it can be done from the inside if you can use few massive stars, few supernovae, perhaps sparing stability supernovae, to disrupt the entire halo. But you can't have a lot of star formation even if it's only massive stars within those substructures. Otherwise, I suspect you would overpredict the amount of metals that we see at early time.
I was just going to really urge you to do the disk heating problem, because I think that really is going to be an important thing to
yes,
do.
Yes, we have been talking at lunch on how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to convince somebody else to do it. But I don't think I succeeded.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, I think the other very interesting aspect of the satellites is their star formation history. I mean, those of the surviving satellites that we see the stars in too, you know, this long-standing problem of why there's a dominant intermediate age population and then no ongoing star formation now. And it would be very interesting to try and look at that in the context.
But of course now, you know, the ones that survive are such a tiny fraction of the ones that are there. And that's what I'm worried about. A few years ago, it was, you know, 10% of them had to survive. Now we have about 1,000 below, about 5 kilometers per second or so. So now you need some suppression mechanism that kills 99% of them. And the 1% that is left, they are such a subsample that you know, I'm sure I can cook up a subsample that has the right property. In fact, sometimes there is also, there is more information than how many there are. There is also the radial distribution and how they're distributed within M31, right? They seem to be distributed in a polar plane, the one that survived. And of course here they are just, you know, more or less isotropic.
Piero, are you going to do a microlensing prediction, running cylinders through the simulation?
I've been trying in the same way that I was trying to convince somebody to do this problem. I've been asking around who's got the best ray tracing code that could be applied to do gravitational lensing. It turns out that Dan Metcalf apparently has a great code to do that, because it's an AMR code that could deal with substructure. And we already sent him the elliptical galaxy for that about 6 months ago. So I suspect you are working on that, but yes, it's in the plan. Incidentally, we are thinking of all the data are probably going to be public in a year or so. So if you have any interest in doing any of this project, you can let me know now or wait for the data to be public. You know, give us some time to play with it.
Yeah, your halo, you have more substructure than most of the previous studies, even say if I compensate for resolution effects. Your halo also has a higher concentration for a typical Milky Way halo than, say, previous work. And that even though your normalization is lower,
yes,
because you use WMAP3 data, where, say, on average scaling, you would have expect an even lower concentration than previous work. So what is special with your halo?
Is there anything special? I'm not sure. It has a relatively high concentration. It was selected to have basically no major merger, to have the right mass range, and to have no major merger at below redshift of 2 or so. And so that's perhaps one of the reasons why the concentration is a bit larger. There is also a large dispersion in the concentration value. So I don't think there is anything particularly special here. Again, it would be nice to redo this on a similar halo. That will take some time. So you know, I suspect that in terms of mass function, again, the elliptical also showed 20,000 satellites. So that doesn't seem to be particularly different. The fraction in substructure will depend on halo mass, concentration, history, etc., etc.
How is the halo concentration of your elliptical comparing to the typical concentration for that mass scale?
It's a good question. I don't remember. If Jörg Diemann, who has dealt with that, were in the audience, he would answer. Both my two collaborators decided to leave before my talk today. So, but I'll let you know.
Okay, I think we have to move along. Next talk will be by Tony Tyson on instrumentation.